first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springson Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, EdSpringson.com, and where you can go to catch all the latest episodes of this show. Make sure while you're there, you join our email mailing list and our RSS feed. Apparently, a little quick note, I had a call today from someone who said they hadn't been getting the email newsletter that we send out every week, and lo and behold, they didn't know you had to sign up for it. I don't know how that happened, but we're going to make sure everybody knows. Just click on the little link on the website at LouisvillePolitics.com, and you'll find the link to get you signed up to the newsletter, so any updates we do or anything else will come straight to your inbox, and that problem will be taken care of. In the meantime, for you guys that are new to the show, our call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326. Or 502-805-0334. You can also sign into our live chat and use your Facebook account if you prefer to do that. You can join Blog Talk, get your own account, whatever you want to do. But you can log in and chat live with us there. You can also catch all the shows on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Yes, folks, we are all over the world. That's what we do. In the meantime, how are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, running ragged as always, Mr. Springson, you know.
Leaving so a normal
work.
Day.
Yeah, normal Monday, leaving work, you know, but I always tell people, I get a lot of people in business will say, "Oh, God, I hate Mondays." I love Mondays, you know, because I always say if something goes wrong or something, you've got 4 days to fix it.
Well, there you go. You know, my days all run together.
If something goes wrong on the weekend, there on Friday afternoon, all you can do is stew on it all weekend, and I've been there, so it's like, yeah, what the hell, Mondays, I got all week to get something straightened out, so.
Well, there you go. I used to feel that way when I was doing that kind of work, so, you know, but you're right, I mean, but, you know, my days all run together anymore, so, It's the nature of the beast, man. News goes on 7 days a week, and that's what I do. So, you know, I can't tell you what day is what. I usually find out when you or Dale signs into the show. I know there's 3 days a week. I'll know what day it is. So that works out well for me. but with that being said, you know, I got to give some props here, man. You know, to Kentucky, I got to give some props to UK, because I tell you, we talked about this game last week between UofL and UK.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told you, and if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but I told you the big men were going to be the difference. That was the thing that had to scare Louisville the most. And the big men were the difference. Kentucky ended up beating Louisville 74-69 and on Thursday night to advance to the Elite Eight. And then they went on to win in the Elite Eight and move on, beating Michigan, to the Final Four. Who would have thought that a month ago?
Well, the big men were definitely a factor in the Michigan game. I mean, Lee coming off the bench. I mean, even UK fans were, like, looking at this Lee guy going, who? like, well, he's tall. But, you know, as a UofL fan, I'll say UK, they're getting better every game, which is what you need to do in a tournament. They've matured. They're playing more consistently. But, you know, had UofL, the difference in that game was a free throw. I mean, UofL, usually a pretty good free throw shooting team, just threw up bricks, you know. And that was, you know, UofL, as much as UK won it, UofL gave it away at the free throw line. They got their opportunities, but they blew them. And, you know, what can you say? If they'd have stayed statistically true to what they shot all season, in a different outcome. UK would have been struggling to catch up. But, you know what? In the end, it didn't work out for UofL. It doesn't pay my bills. I'm just, as I actually lost the dollar to my accountant on that.
Uh-oh.
I lost the second dollar of the year to my accountant, I might add, on UK UofL. But, you know, the one thing I can agree to is much fun as we poke at each other, is that it was a game that did the state of Kentucky proud. I mean, you know, we can look at North Carolina, and it's like, yeah, you got Duke, North Carolina, NC State, Wake Forest, whatever.
Well, I tell you, man, just
from the looks of it right now, it's like, hey, yeah, you see that NCAA trophy? As far as I'm concerned, we can just keep shuttling that thing back and forth on I-64.
Well, there you go. And I tell you honestly, you know, as far as your account is concerned, by the way, just go buy a $2 lottery scratch-off ticket, and if you win $4, hey, you get your $2 write-off for the $2 you lost name. You know, I tell you, it's interesting because you're right about the free throws, and it was uncharacteristic for Kentucky.
If I report it as a gambling loss, he'll have to take it as a gambling game. So we'll just
You don't want to piss him off. He'll cost you more in the long run. But, you know, you're talking about free throws, and that's exactly true. UofL missed their free throws primarily in the first half. But Kentucky, you know, Kentucky uncharacteristically was hitting most of theirs. So the thing that was so great about it, though, and I tell you, the thing that stood out to me the most, I mean, for one thing, I thought it was a hell of a game. I really did. Kentucky refused to give up. But I've got to tell you, you talk about a class person, Russ Smith, departing senior Russ Smith with UofL. You know, I've listened to all of the post-game interviews with him, all of the different things he's had to say. He even went to the Kentucky locker room after the game to congratulate Kentucky. And, I mean, you know, if there's any guy in this world that I hope would ever be in the NBA and make his dream come true, it would have to be Russ Smith. I've never seen more class or character from a person in a loss like that in their very final game than you could get with Russ Smith. And I tell you honestly, I mean, Louisville has really been a class act for quite some time. The departing seniors, you got Russ Smith, you got Hancock, all these departing seniors, this really truly was a special UofL team. Look at everything they've accomplished over the last 4 years with Rick Pitino coaching, of course. But you look at that, you don't find players that are that unselfish and that willing to give up themselves for team ball very often, especially for a four-year period like that. And that's what you get with seniors. That's always been the rub that I've had with Kentucky since Calipari came in, trying to get these one-and-done players. And Louisville just proved why it's important to have
I'm not a big fan of Calipari, but I won't take it out on the players. The players worked their asses off. And there was a mutual respect. Even Russ Smith said that. You know, the players have always been good. Mm-hmm. They've always been sportsmanlike. Mm-hmm. And the thing that cracked me up is after that game when U of L, you know, obviously wasn't going to win it, the look on Julius Randle's face. I mean, he was just, you could just tell he was just, he was in the zone where it was like, God. Thank God we won. You just see that look on his face like, oh, my God, what have we just had to fight through? But the kids are great. So, like I said, now, as a resident of Kentucky, I do a lot of business around the country. I'm going to brag and say, oh, yeah, the NCAA trophy, one day it's in Louisville, one year. And we'll put it on a bus and take the one-hour trip to Lexington, and they get to keep it for a year, and then we'll take it back. Mm-hmm. And, the rest of the country, y'all can just, if you want to know what it is, it's somewhere.
Well, let me ask you this. What do we call this Kentucky team? Because Kentucky beat Michigan to advance to the Final Four. Michigan is the only other team that has ever started five freshmen that advanced to the Final Four since the new format went into play, back in 75 or something like that. So you've got Michigan with the Fab Five. Everybody remember those guys. So you got Michigan's Fab Five. Now Kentucky, we can't call them the Fab Five. What do we call them? I think that's pretty interesting. And it's really interesting, too, when you look at the impact that the freshman had on this game. I mean, reserve forward Marcus Lee in the Michigan game.
Yeah.
Marcus Lee has scored a total of 9 points since the beginning of the year. And he comes into the Michigan game, scores 10 points, has 8 rebounds and 2 blocks in, 15 minutes of play time. So,
I guess he finally got it.
Well, it's interesting because I was kind of wondering, going into Michigan, I knew that Kentucky had a size advantage inside. And when that game's in, and give Michigan, I tell you what, give Michigan props, man. They might not have size inside, but them boys can shoot the hell out of the three. But when you looked at the Michigan-Kentucky game on paper, Kentucky should have blown them out because of the size advantage. But I got to admit, I was kind of worried because Willie Cauley-Stein, who's a major, tremendous shot blocker inside, Willie Cauley-Stein was, guess what? He wasn't in the game. He injured his left foot on Friday against Louisville. So when he injured his left foot, he was there in a walking boot and crutches and sat on the bench the whole time playing cheerleader. And I was kind of concerned without his shot blocking ability what that was going to do, because Michigan doesn't mind driving the lane and drawing the fouls. But then you get, like I said, you get Marcus Lee coming in, 10 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. I mean, he basically owned the boards. Kentucky just seems to be on a mission. So I want somebody to come up with a name for this. You can't use the Fab Five because it's been used with Michigan, but I want somebody to come up with a name for this group of Kentucky players that just made the Final Four starting five freshmen. I think that will be very, very interesting to hear. In the meantime, this is a political show, but, man, I tell you what, we've got a lot to be proud of in Kentucky in this NCAA tournament. Now,
yeah,
my brackets are shot all the hell.
But in all fairness, we do get to talk about basketball for the same reason I mentioned earlier. Yeah, people listen from other states. It's like, yeah, it's Kentucky. Deal with it.
You got a point there.
We own basketball in Kentucky anymore, so deal with it.
You got a point there. You got a point there big time. But this is a political show, so we do have some things we've got to get to. We're going to talk a lot more tonight about what happened downtown and the riots from last weekend. But right now, word is that we have a budget deal. Do you believe that? We've actually got a budget deal. We don't have a special session scheduled yet. Let me make that very clear. Yet. Because, they're going to,
the thing
I guarantee
you,
they're going to have a special session.
I was actually going to run parimutuel odds on, whether we're going to have a special session or not. So it's a good thing we didn't do that. Of course, you say, yet.
Right. Well, that's true. And here's what we've got. From what I understand, there were some small gains made for state universities and teachers. Lexington, everybody was screaming because Lexington was trying to get $75 million to remake Rupp Arena, and everybody thought that was a given because Kentucky's in the, you know, he's in the NCAA and advancing all this crap. But it didn't work out that way. So for you guys who had that on your mind, thinking they were going to get it anyway, you were wrong. Right now we have a $20.3 billion budget. And what's interesting is they talk about the small gains of state universities and things like that, and education, we gained a significant investment in education, and I find that laughable because according to the budget, they're going to cut funding of operations for state universities and the technical college system by 1.5% this year, in 2014-15, and then keep the funding stagnant in 2015-16 year. Now, they're acting like this was a benefit for education, because Steve Beshear, Governor Steve Beshear, and the Kentucky House had proposed a cut of 2.5%. Folks, a cut is a cut. I don't like this spin machine and the way that they're playing this. I thought that was a very interesting take on it. Well, education came out great because they only got cut 1.5% instead of 2.5%. What do you think about that? I mean, is that stupid or what?
Well, that's a classic. You can either aim small, miss small, or you can aim big, miss big. So they basically, in reverse of a sale at a department store, they came in with an early projection, not a budget, but an early projection of, you know, we're going to have to cut this much. And then when they don't cut that much, they call it a gain. And it's the same old stuff. It's just like it's the exact same game they play when they talk about cutting spending. It's like, well, we were, you know, when the federal government was going to spend $1 billion mm-hmm. more, and then they said, well, we only spent $900 million more. It's like, well, look, we saved $100 million. It's like, no, you didn't. Or we
see,
cut $100 million from
yep.
what? You know. So yeah, the real world losses are there, and education obviously probably going to get more expensive for the kiddos. So that's not a win, especially in a state where education is one of our Achilles heels. You know, it's like for the most part, the overall education system in Kentucky is nothing to write home about. And guess what? It's going to maintain that status because we're not going to invest one way or the other to change it.
Well, and it's part of it. You know, your accountant would look at that as a gain. You're still losing money. And the second thing here, too, is, though, they did approve. The budget did actually approve the major university's top priority projects. For example, the University of Louisville got $80 million for classroom building. You know, these things are probably going to be borrowed money, of course. You know, you've got 16 community and technical colleges are going to be allowed to proceed with their priority construction. It's funny you mentioned students paying more money because, lo and behold, to pay for that, students are going to be hit with a new student fee of about $8 per credit hour. So there you go. You've got $56 million in state bonds for the Kentucky International Convention Center right here in downtown Louisville. Of course, like I said, Rupp lost $65 million, but it's only for this year. You know, Stumbo and everybody else went on record and said that, hey, look, or Stivers did, I'm sorry, Senate President Bob Stivers said that the 2015 legislature will probably approve that if they get a more formalized financial plan. So we'll look at that one. But, you know, we get into all of these different things, and we're sitting here like, wow, this is supposed to be good stuff. You know, and then, of course, you've got teachers that are going to be getting more money. You know, which is kind of funny to me because right now we continue talking about how these teachers need more money. And then we have to look at schools like Frost Middle School, who was reported last week to be the worst performing school in America, according to some reports. So tell me where this is such a great deal. We're going to give teachers more money to do less. I don't get this. It's a real struggle for me to understand that. But we are going to put full restoration from the cuts that were made last year into child care. They're going to get $53 million this year, $58 million in next year's budget. You know, we look at all of this stuff, and then we've got a little caveat here where mine safety the budget for mine safety is going to be reduced $15 million a year. See, these little things are the problem for me, because we're going to give teachers more money. We're going to cut funding at universities, and we're going to cut mine safety funding $15 million a year at a time when we still have coal mine accidents. We still have safety problems that we're really struggling with. We have a fight on against coal for cleaner coal, and we're going after safety aspect and a dangerous job. To do what? To give teachers a 1-2%
increase. That makes absolutely no sense to me, the mine safety in particular. And I understand things have to be cut, but when you're talking mine safety, you're talking about some really hard-working dudes going down into a really dangerous, dirty job so we can keep the lights on cheap style. And with the pressure that coal is under from everything from the EPA to natural gas being used, there's pressure on coal. And the tonnage sold, and probably you would think, via supply and demand, there's pressure on the coal industry as far as costs go, because gas is really giving coal a run for its money. So all the while you're looking at it thinking, so now their profit margins are going to get squeezed. This is the time of all times, when if they were going to get lax and maybe not upkeep the mines and not make safety a priority, it's when the budget is tight. So, at the mines themselves as private enterprises. So now they're going to cut mine safety at the time that, if I were looking at it, as far from a management point, this is the last time in the world you want to do it. If you're going to ease up on mine safety, do it when the miners when the coal companies are making all sorts of money, and upkeep the mine shouldn't be a problem. But now it's going to be a problem. They're under pressure, and the state's going to kind of turn a blind eye and say, I guess effectively they're saying, we know profit margins are squeezed. We're not going to come around and inspect your mines as often. So if you want to, skimp a little, you'll probably get away with it.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. Let's go to the phones. I believe this is our good friend Paul Holliger with Stop It. How are you, sir?
With Stop Invisible Taxes, which is exactly what has prompted this call, particularly as it relates to the educational cabal in Kentucky. One of the things that I don't think a lot of folks in Kentucky realize, that every time a university or a county school system decides that they want to undertake some type of building expansion program, that it becomes a double whammy. First of all, they usually go with bonded indebtedness, which increases their total debt service responsibilities. Okay? They use that a lot of times to request additional funding, or in some cases they get the funding and then they acquire the additional bonded indebtedness. But in the process of doing that, when they acquire the site and when they build the multi-million-dollar building on that site, they remove from the tax rolls any opportunity whatsoever for that parcel of land with that multi-million-dollar building from generating any tax revenue for the school district, for the local county government, or for the state government. The University of Louisville, in particular, has been particularly aggressive in getting new sites and new buildings built all around Jefferson County. Every time they build a new building on a new piece of land that they had to acquire, that removes that property from the tax rolls, in essence, shifting the responsibility for government services for that parcel of land onto whom? That's right, everyone else. Everyone else.
Well, that's true.
So this is yet one of those another example of one of a multitude of insidious, hidden tax burdens that people have to bear, all because government says so. And furthermore, we never hear these same entities talk about being good stewards of the tax money and, for example, say, we have found a way to shave 15% in expenses off our operating expense for the year. We never hear that. We never hear that. Never. But yet everyone else that listens to this show and everyone else in normal society, when the income begins to not be enough to meet the outgo, they cut either they cut back on the outgo or they find additional income. And I believe the government folks only look at increasing additional income, and they keep going to the same well. More fees,
yeah.
Or in the case of higher education, they're putting all of this on the back of the kids.
Exactly. They're doing it to the kids.
Believe me, I know it. And, you know, that's one of the things I thought you were going where I've gone a number of times before, but I always say, you know, these colleges are full of professors that teach accounting and business efficiency and environmental sciences. And, you know, just as you would think, colleges are full of smart people. But I'm with you, Paul. They never seem to be smart enough to figure out how to cut costs. Yet the dude working on the line at Ford or working anywhere else, he has to not only figure out how to raise his income, but he has to figure out how to control his expenses. And with or without a college education, yet all these professors and everybody can't figure out how to deliver the same services at a reduced cost. Same thing
I'm
going to do with you. Everything everybody else on the planet has to do, universities can't seem to figure out how to do it, even though they're packed full of smart people with PhDs.
The University of Louisville had hold on, Ed.
Go ahead. I'll listen.
The University of Louisville, a few years ago, as many folks in the audience will recall, had a massive flood event on campus. Damn, it caused tens of millions of dollars in damage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I actually initiated an email to a series of folks in the U of L administration, as well as our Jefferson County and Louisville Metro Government Metro Council people, and suggested strongly that the solution to on-campus flooding problems and eliminating them for the future lies over in the Speed School, where there's tons and tons of highly qualified engineers and engineers that are in training. Do you know that the University of Louisville, in cooperation with the Metropolitan Sewer District, went out and hired an outside consultant to get that taken care of?
Yes, I did know. You know, that's what I'm getting at. And when we look at the only debt that's actually really truly growing in this country right now, it's the student loan debt. I mean, student loan debt right now, we continue talking about the American dream. You go to college, you get your degree, you go get a good job, you go buy your house, you go buy a new car, all of those things, you know, to keep this economy running, right? But kids today can't go out and buy a house. They can't go out, when they get out of college, buy the new car. And it's all because of student loan. I mean, this is crazy. Right now, here in this country, student loan debt for these poor kids totals up to be somewhere around $1 trillion. It's the only increasing long-term debt that's really going on. I mean, you talk about what's disturbing here is here you've got consumer debt rising to, for lack of a better word, biblical proportions for these kids getting out of college. So these kids can't leave home. They can't fend for themselves. 60% of their annual income on estimate, this is according to a Huffington Post article, 60% of their income on average, of their annual income, is going to service student loan debt. How can you do that? And you still got these colleges continuing to add these hidden taxes, these invisible taxes, as you guys call it, overstop it, these fees, so-called fees, for what? The professors are tenured, so they can stay. They've got a job for life whether they do any work or not. They get benefits for life whether they do any work or not. You know, they're getting raises every year, no matter what their students are learning or not learning. I mean, this is the thing with education. We have become this society where we spend money after money after money without proven results. We start that mindset in the public school or the indoctrination camps, as our good friend Dale the Truth calls them, and then we send them to college saying you got to have more of this indoctrination. But if we're going to make you pay a bunch of money for it, you can't afford to pay back. What's the answer here? How do we stop this?
Well, you know, you speak of professors. It's unfortunately, it's much more ate up than that. It's just like at U of L when our friend Ron Sider took up the fight a couple years ago. It has to do with these university administrators cutting deals with private companies to basically for a captive audience, whether it's food services, housing services, whatever. They're basically it's not only is it the university, but the university is basically indenturing your children to these private companies that cut deals with the administration.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see it going on at UK right now. Their dormitories are being built by a private firm. I believe they're going to be managed by a private firm, and the cost is going to go up 30% next year. The dorms are going to be nice. But you know what? These kids don't have the jobs to afford that crap.
Well, this is what's disturbing. This is what's disturbing. This is according to an AP report that actually came out last week, March 27th it came out. But this is what's disturbing. We've got 37 million people in this country that are totaling up $1 trillion in student debt. When you graduate with a doctorate or a bachelor's, you're getting the same job at the same place. You're making the same amount of money. That piece of paper is not doing you any good. For example, a good example they use in this story, 40% of households, think about that, almost half of the households that are led by somebody that's 35 years old or younger have student loan debt. That was according to a 2012 Pew Research Center. When we look at that, you look at things like this, the median 2009 net worth for a household that doesn't have student loan debt was $117,000. The net worth for the same household with student debt, outstanding student loans, was $42,000. So if you don't have the student loans, your net household income, your net household is going to have three times more money. And yet we continue raising the price of this, telling everybody they have to have this piece of paper. You don't have to have a piece of paper to manage a McDonald's, but they're making it a requirement. You know, and that's where I think we've gone wrong. We put so much focus on these bachelor's programs and everything else that we have forgotten the true value of somebody who can actually do the work. I mean, that's the truth of it.
Well,
on the job is gone.
I refer to it as the educational industrial complex. It's a confluence of marketing, peer pressure, easy financing, and just everybody. It's basically everybody's colluded against these kids. I mean, I've said it before. Is this country? You know, the education system is the one thing. It whether it's high schools that are trying to get a percentage of, you know, and that's one of the reprehensible things about the education system, is they focus on how many kids go to college, not how many kids are gainfully employed 4 years after they graduate or 8 years after they graduate high school. How many get into college and graduate college? You know, for what? You graduated college. You've got a degree in 16th century Russian literature. So what? I would much rather a kid graduate vocational school, go through ongoing education, and pull him down 125 bills large because he's highly certified diesel mechanic.
Right.
And that's a good point, Ed. Ed, that's a really good point because I've actually had the opportunity last year to sit down and have about a 20-minute meeting with the man who runs and owns Atlas Machine Tool over there in southwestern Jefferson County. And during this meeting, he revealed that his company was having to undertake their own apprentice program because they were having great difficulty finding machine apprentices that had enough of the basic skills to make it worth hiring them. And he said he was going to start these people at $50,000 to be an apprentice machinist at his joint, at his place, okay? And I know that you're in the machine business, machine tools and machining business. How does that compare? How does $50,000 for a rookie apprentice machinist compare to,
It's way high compared to what I pay because we're more on the supply side and we don't actually do the machining. But I can tell you this, right now, I am currently struggling like hell to find somebody that'll hook up what we call a machine called a proofer. I can't get a drive unit for it because I know about two mechanics that can get it done, two machinists that can get it, because and all the others are tied up with massive amounts of overtime. They have a brother-in-law who is, he's it's like four Sundays, you know, four weekends out of five, he's working. He can't get enough. They're paying for his ongoing education. They send him to I guess these kind of tournaments, you know, to see who the best machinist is, kind of thing. There, people are falling over themselves to get machinists. I mean, me, I bring people in. Definitely the basic skills, like being able to read and measurements and stuff. Yeah, things like that. Yeah, that'll get you hired with me.
I think this just proves Ed Springsteen's.
You know, if I'm in the process of hiring, I have had enough misses. I mean, I've had some epic streaks of misses. You bring people in, they seem like they got it on the ball, and then it just doesn't stick. You know,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, that's the problem though, because I mean, this all started for me anyway. I mean, for me, it generally, this whole mindset started in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. Back then, everybody was talking tech is the future. Do all of this stuff on computers and everything else, and you're going to be set for life. Well, that was good for about, what, 5-8 years? Because, our technology is advancing so fast. Well, I mean, it's just the technology.
In the early 80s, they were absolutely right. I went to college in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And this is before the educational industrial complex caught on to just how big a bunch of suckers we were. This is when living in a dorm was like one-tenth the cost of living in an apartment.
But what people didn't understand.
This is before they caught on to the fact that they could scare you into spending any amount of money going for an education.
Well, and that's the thing, though, because what the big deal was, at the same time they were telling everybody to go into computers, IBM, who was the largest employer at that point of people in that career field, were hiring these people with degrees for janitorial service and sweeping floors. They had too many people too quick, and now we see the result of that. There are some people who can make money in IT. One of them is in our chat room right now, Cyzeris. But, you know, the large majority of these guys are getting out of school with computer degrees and everything else, and they're fighting for the same $12 to $14 an hour everybody else is.
Yep.
And that's the problem.
Absolutely.
We have not put any value.
I'll impart to you a piece of wisdom, even though I'm not that old, you know. I've had a number of high school kids work for me. And we, you know, shoot the breeze with them in the warehouse, and they say, well, what would you do if you were me going into stuff? I said, well, what do you want to do?
Right.
And of course, the standard response is, well, I'd like to design video games. program computers. And that's always ask them the same thing. How many other kids in your class are headed that way, you know, by percentage? And they go, oh, I don't know, you know, 80%. And I tell them right there, it's like basic law of supply and demand, you ain't getting paid squat.
I hear you.
Because I'll be able to hire half your graduating class to do the same crap you think you're going to be so great at. And they say, well, what would you do? I says, me? I'd be a plumber. If I had to do it all over again, didn't have what I got going right now, I told them, I says, I'd be a plumber. I said, because I've done the math on what it costs to have a septic pump put in. The dude's making like $140 an hour based on how long it takes me. I said, dude, they're making more money than lawyers because they have a trade.
Well, that's exactly it. We have taken all of the focus and the emphasis off of trade schools, vocational schools, all this stuff. We're trying to pump everybody through college with an IT or computer degree, or we're trying to pump everybody through for an LPN position and things like that. We're always short on nurses. But if you remember just as little as 10 or 12 years ago, you know, they were screaming about these nurse shortage and everything else, so these nurses were going to get paid $30 an hour or better in a lot of cases. Now you've seen where they're not really hiring any nurses, and if they are, it's an employer's market, so they're able to hire them a lot cheaper. Let's go to the phones real quick before we go to break. I think this is our good friend Ken Molman. How are you, sir? Ken? Hello?
Let me unmute my phone. I'm here.
There he is.
Hi.
How are you, sir?
So I'm doing good. Thanks, guys. Hey, you're talking about two fields that I'm very intimate with. I work in IT, and my wife's a nurse. You know, the issue with any of this, right, is there's got to be a cost-benefit analysis on anything you do. And it really depends also on, do you have the means to do it? Is it something you're trying to do to get advanced in a career, or what are you trying to do? You know, I did not complete college. I actually was lucky enough to be at a time when the dot-com boom was going strong. And so there was really no reason to go to college because they would hire anybody who touched a keyboard. And, you know, you can make up – well, you can make up for a lot of that with experience, right? I mean, right. You can make up for the lack of a degree with experience. Now, there does come a point, though, in your career where you do reach a peak without that degree. And I think I've pretty much reached that personally. The question then becomes, is it worth going back to school and paying $50,000 to go get a piece of paper and – is that $50,000 really going to net me enough, you know, the opportunity cost of that money that's being spent, is it worth going back to school? And quite honestly, the answer for me is no, because I got to take $50,000 out of somewhere else, which that could be doing some other, you know, building up my 401k or whatever it is, and whatever. Now, by comparison, right, a nurse. Nurse is a very technical field and it's very difficult, and it's not something – I imagine you could learn it along the way. But, you know, you're dealing with healthcare. That's probably not something to learn on the way.
My wife is a nurse. Dude, I don't want them learning on the fly.
No.
Well, the point I'm getting at, though, here, fellas, is this. The point I'm getting at, though, here is this. Ken, you feel like you've peaked out in your career right now because you don't have a piece of paper. Does that mean that you're not as intelligent as a person who does have a piece of paper and you've got all this experience? Of course not. But the employer has put so much focus on telling the whole world that this piece of paper is your ticket to the brass ring, if you will. All right? If this piece of paper is your ticket to the brass ring, it doesn't matter how smart or dumb you are. As long as you got this piece of paper, we're going to reward you for a piece of paper. We're not going to reward you for your work ethic.
Well,
we're not going to reward you for your value,
Ed,
give you true value.
Ed, there's where you're wrong, Ed. Is you're saying the employer's saying that? Employers don't say that. I've never said that. I don't give a damn what kind of degree you've got. My IT guy, similar to Ken, does not have a degree. He's awesome, though.
I'm going to tell you right now.
No, the employers, the education system looks at you and says, you need this degree. You take your degree to an employer, and that first thing they'll look at you and say is, what's your work experience? I don't give a crap about your degree.
You could think that,
Ed,
all you
I'll
want
you,
to. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to discount what you're saying in some career fields like IT. Cy Zeres is in our chat room lighting it up. He works in IT, and he's doing pretty good. You know, he thinks he's making great money, too, as well as Kent. But I'm telling you, employers do that. I know that from personal experience working at places like a United Parcel Service and a Ford Motor Company where the best and the brightest – weren't getting the promotions and making the decisions. Only the people who had a piece of paper did. They could have been dumb as a box of rocks. I saw people getting promoted personally to those positions because they had a piece of paper that were the worst results people in the whole entire plant at both places, UPS
and
Ford.
Again,
so
that,
it does happen every day.
That may be the case in corporate America, but where 70 to 80% of your jobs are, not the case.
I was just going to say, that's the difference, Ed. That's the difference between big business and small business. Small business is nimble. They don't care about the little stupid things about do you have a piece of paper, do you have the certification, do you have all this garbage. They want to know if you can get the job done, and they want you to do the job. And that's all that
small
business,
medium-sized
business wants.
Small business has the time, the patience, and the micromanagement to look at you and says, okay, you say you can do it? Do it. I'm going to watch. If you can do it, you got a job.
Well, I tell you, boy, I will strongly disagree. We've got to take a quick break. We'll come back and finish this we'll come back with this conversation, I guess. Let's take a quick break. You're listening to the Ed Sprinks Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Yes, we are. I tell you what, this education talk has gone on a lot longer than I expected it to, so let's just stay with it. You know, I was just telling Ken, I was just talking to Ed in the queue during the break. You know, I understand that there are some opportunities like you guys are talking about. You know, the IT field may be one of them. I mean, my IT guy doesn't have a degree, and I've got no problem with that. But these mom-and-pop places and these small business and everything else you guys keep referring to, it's not like that as much as you would like to say that it is. Because, you know, you go over to Riverport, which is my neck of the woods, you know, here I'm a guy who is business ownership, business management, accounting, all of this stuff. I bring it all to the table. Human resources, micromanagement, everything. That's my 40-year experience. But I didn't complete my degree. I was one semester short quite a few years ago because I had to focus on my family, and I never went back. Now it would cost me a bunch of money to go back because nobody wants to accept those credits anymore. So I'm not going back. But with all of this experience, all of this knowledge, when I walk in the door for an interview, you know, and I tell them what I'm there for, I'm interviewing for the job and give them a resume with all of this, the first thing they look at is education that says you haven't got your degree. No, sir, but I can, and before you get anything else out, well, without a degree, we're just not interested. We're sorry. And send you on your way. Now, they'll hire me as a laborer for $9 an hour, picking and packing and doing stupid shipping stuff, and that's a big problem. It's a big problem now, you know, but that's the way it is today. It's not just the big corporate America.
Well, I think what you're seeing there, Ed, what you're talking about is the fact that right now we're in a employer's market, right?
Sure.
We're, what, 6 years, 7 years, 8 years, depending on where you clock it, into a recession. And so employers can afford to be picky. You've got a higher than normal percentage of people looking for jobs, higher than normal percentage of people that are unemployed. So, sure, you're going to encounter folks that are a little bit more picky. And certainly, I've seen that myself. But at the end of the day, if you were – and this is all market dependent, right? I mean, different job markets are different things. You know, you mentioned before the break about nurses and we need more nurses. Well, in Northern Kentucky, we've got a glut. We've actually got too many nurses in Northern Kentucky.
No. I said 10 or 12 years ago we had needed nurses. Nowadays,
okay,
it's an employer's market and they're paying nurses less.
Yes.
It's a competitive market. That's what I was getting at. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm sorry. But take that and then go to Atlanta. Right, or at basically anywhere in the state of Florida, and nurses are still heavily in demand because it's a geographic demand. So you do have different demands in different regions, and you're going to have different needs, and it really comes down to what are you willing to do to get that job, right? Are you willing to move, or are you willing to get paid less, or are you willing to do whatever? And at the end of the day, you know, I have done the math. I'm not going back to school to finish my degree. Now, I wouldn't tell anyone to drop out. You know, if they're already in, especially if they're on scholarship, man, finish that sucker up, you know.
Right.
But at the same time, if I'm looking at do I have to put $50,000 in the hole before I even get a real job, that's really a hard choice to make. And even with a real job, it's hard to say, oh, yeah, I'm just going to drop $50,000 to get a piece of paper.
Well, it really is. And, you know, the point I'm trying to get at, and I'll give you a true life example. I got arrested in July of 2012, I guess, as everybody knows by now. Okay? But during the 2 months prior to that, I was out looking for jobs. I was actually on a job market because I figured I could still maintain the websites, I could do the radio shows every night and everything else, and make some income too, make some other income. Folks, I tell you what, we've got 150,000 people each and every month that follow us. But here in Louisville, Kentucky, when you get blackballed by politicians because you're out their butts, you don't get advertising. And that's the problem. So I decided, okay, I've been paying for this out of my pocket long enough. You know, let's go get a real job and make ends meet. Now, one of the jobs, I won't give you the employer because I'm not going to embarrass them like that, but one of the jobs I went to look at was $75,000 a year. They wanted a plant manager in a plant that consisted of 45 employees on two different shifts. A simple pick-and-pack operation. Inventory management kind of job, if you will. I've been doing that stuff since I was 18 years old. Okay? You get into this situation, you've got all of these years of proven results, almost 30 years of proven results. You give a list of names, numbers, companies. You can call and verify my results. I'll even give you copies of the letters that were given to me for doing outstanding jobs throughout my whole career. Okay? The guy looks at me and says that without that piece of paper, they won't talk to me. So I offered a deal. I did. I offered a deal. This is how bad it was because I just wanted to get back into that field. I offered a deal, and I said, look, I tell you what. I will work for 30 days at half pay. At half pay. If you get rid of me after 30 days because you don't think I can do the job, you keep that half a pay out part ways and we're happy. But if I do the job and you're pleased with my results, then you're going to pay me full pay that second month. Would not do it without a piece of paper. They ended up hiring a kid, 23 years old, with no work experience, fresh out of fucking U of L Management Business Administration program, and made him a plant manager. The people he was managing were older than he was for the most part. He lasted all of 3 months before they ran him off because he was stupid as rocks. I know this because I knew two people inside the plant. That's what I'm getting at. That's what you run into. And in this employer's market, what's really happening here is with this whole education system and this indoctrination camps, I mean, that's exactly what they are. I've got everybody brainwashed thinking that this piece of paper means everything. Bill Gates didn't finish college. Look at him and Microsoft. And these employers have got to start thinking about this on-the-job stuff and experience levels. Now, because that's what's wrong with the quality in America. That's what's wrong with your output.
Yeah, and that's true for today. But back to what Ken was saying and the examples that have been giving, the job market is fluid. Always has been. Always has been. You know, IT guys are hot, then they're not. Nurses are hot, then they're not. You know, experienced managers are hot, then they're not. You know, and that's the way it goes. But, and trades. Sometimes the trades are hot, and then sometimes they're not. You know, there have been times when machinists just weren't that in demand, whether, you know, whether automation was rendering the old school guys, you know, replacing them with CAD operators or not. But it moves, and that's the thing. There's nothing to be taken for granted, but, again, the educational industrial complex is going to sit there and tell you that you need the degree, but by the same token, they're not going to tell you that they can't guarantee you by any stretch. And that's what I'm always saying. Be cynical. You know, they say, oh, you get an IT degree, your chances of employment are this. And kids should look at them and say, well, yeah, it's a hot field now, but kind of like nursing was 12 years ago. You know, they're like, oh, shortage of nurses, and the students flock to the nurse and nursing school, and then there's a glut, and it's like, okay, well, now there's a glut.
You know, well, sure, because everybody gets into that.
Everything ebbs and flows, and this is what I told my daughter. I have a daughter who's angling for law school, and we were reading some articles about, there's a glut of lawyers right now. And she's like, oh, God, is that bad? I says, no. I said, everything runs in cycles. I said, yeah, there's too many lawyers, big corporate lawyers, too many lawyers right now. But I said, a lot of them are going to age out. It's about time you get into the profession. It should be going into a shortage. I said, don't worry about it. Don't buy into the temporary crap. So
When you've got...
Yeah, back to it is the schools market this crap, whether it's a nursing degree, which is damned expensive now, or any other degree, they're telling you you need it, and that's I'm telling you, you don't. You know, I look back at the business world, and I laugh. My grandfather used to look at me and say, oh, you got 4 years of business school, huh? And I said, yep. He says, you know how to cook yet and how to bake? And I said, what do you mean? He says, it's just a... he said, you're just on a fucking four-year loaf. You ought to know how to cook bread
now.
And I'm like,
you know,
okay.
You know, there's two
all
things.
All right, I got it.
there's two things. There's two things here that really screwed the law profession in recent years. Just two. I'll just name two. One, when you had an old lady sue McDonald's because she spilled hot coffee between her legs because she's driving down the road with hot coffee she got at a McDonald's drive-thru and she burned her inner thigh. They took a temperature test, and the coffee was a couple of degrees too warm. It doesn't matter if it was 2 degrees cooler. It still would have burned her thigh. But she wants $1 million on that lawsuit. And then everybody went into the law profession. Then today, you can tell that there's too many lawyers out there because, ironically, it's McDonald's once again. We've got a guy in California trying to sue McDonald's for pain and suffering and anxiety and everything else because he went through drive-thru and ordered a hamburger, and they only gave him one napkin. One napkin. And it's destroyed his life. That's the problem with the law. You know, the point I guess I'm trying to get at here, because we are going to have to get into closing arguments. Paul, thanks for the call. Ken, thank you for the call as well. Ed, I tell you what, I'm going to let you go into closing arguments, and I'll just make mine with my next point. Go ahead.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, you know, I've always been against the recently, especially as my kids got closer to college age, you come to realize that the college and the education, it's not like the paper chase series anymore. It's not like the old 60s thing, room 222. It's a business, and people need to look at it as such. The education system markets to you. It makes plenty of false promises, or at least, you know, conditional promises. You know, you should be able to get a job. Yeah, this is a hot field for now. They build shrines to themselves. The administration pays themselves huge salaries. And truthfully, like you say, and the pressure is, and like I said, the networking, and they network all the way down to high schools. Oh, you got to get a college degree. When in fact, nowadays, most of the people I know, what you need to do is make yourself employable. Don't buy into it. And I hope, you know, I'm not telling people not to go to college, but it says you need to decide what you want to do in life. And then, you know, because if it's not what you enjoy doing, they can never pay you enough to do it, ever, to be miserable. But beyond that, you have to sit there and you kind of evaluate things. You got to look at the world the way the world works. You know, things need to be fixed. Do you really want to go to college? And stop and think, hey, if these guys are pushing so hard for me to go to college, why? Because if it was so necessary, wouldn't the business community be telling me that? You know, wouldn't this? And like I say, I'm a cynic. I have a lot of resentment for the educational industrial complex, the way they force these kids into debt servitude by the time they get out of college, all this, that, and the other. And I just look at it and says, let's stop focusing on what the industrial marketing complex for the education system. Let's not focusing on what they say. Start looking out in the real world. Best advice I ever got from a broker was, he said, what do you see in the real world? Don't buy into the crap. Don't buy into the headlines. What do you see? You know, and like I said, if you ask around, you're not going to find a machinist out of work. You're not going to find a plumber out of work. You're not going to find anybody. You're not going to find a skilled trade out of work. Yeah, it may not be glamorous. Hollywood may not do it. Politicians like Greg Fisher wanting 50,000 degrees in so many years, you know, screw that. Let's just have a productive society. And don't be afraid to be a part of productive society. Even if that doesn't involve a degree, it doesn't involve a suit and tie. There's nothing wrong with that. And everything from the government to the education system to Hollywood, they've all lost touch with that. They've lost touch with an honest day's work, you know, a skilled tradesman. It's not glorified anymore. That's a damn shame.
Well, you know, my dad was a bricklayer. And throughout the 70s, he was a bricklayer. They did boiler work and everything else, too. But in the 70s, skilled bricklayer that he was, laying brick netted $150 per 1,000 brick laid. I actually went in and started my own construction business in the 90s, and I kept that business for quite a few years. The going rate for bricklayers in the 90s, 20 years later, folks, was about $150 per 1,000 brick laid. And I tell you, there's a lot of reasons for that. I ultimately got out of my construction business because of illegal workers. Because you had a lead guy that would go in and start competing with you, and he was able to sell the work a lot cheaper than you could afford to do it for because he was bringing in illegal work, so he didn't have the workman's comp. He didn't have all the other things that you, as a legal, law-abiding citizen, have to carry as an employer. Ed, you know what I'm talking about.
Here's the thing.
Because of that mindset, because of the willingness of some employers I know in the construction industry to knowingly allow this kind of stuff to happen, hardworking people started deciding to listen to the hype, let's go to college and get the degree. I don't have to work that hard. I just got to have to be the guy to watch over the people who do. All of a sudden, in that 20 to 30 year span, we started losing people in the trades. And that's really how it started, in my opinion. But we started losing people in the trades because we had so many people coming in illegally. They were willing to do the grunt work and do the dirty work. They could do it cheaper than law-abiding citizens could. So then everybody decided, okay, we'll go to college. We'll buy into that hype. They buy into the hype. They go to college. They get the degree. But all of a sudden, you've got a glut with nurses. You've got a glut with lawyers. So these professional careers are gone. Everybody and their brother thinks they're going to go into business administration and always have. So you got all of these people with these paper degrees that have no common sense to run a business whatsoever. And we forgot about the guys who built America who didn't need that paper. That paper has been pushed on our society forever. But it was only when those lazy people who came up in the 80s and 90s started buying in all of this crap with the dot-com bubbles and all of this other junk, that now those same people are the decision makers. They bought their way into the job. That's essentially what it is. Well, if I went to school and did this, it doesn't matter how my business operates. I can only hire people with degrees. I had a piece of paper, and I did quite well because I never had to figure out anything. And, folks, that's the truth of it. The bottom line is, I'm with Ed Martin here. You have to decide what you want to do while you're young enough to make that choice. But personally, my choice would not be to spend 60% of my income paying somebody else for lending me money to get a piece of paper that I will never recoup that investment from. That's just me. That's life. I deal with it. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here, same time, same channel with Mr. Martin. Thanks again to Paul and Ken for their calls. And until then, folks, we'll see you. Have a great night. Take care, Mr. Martin.
All right. Have a good one, Mr. Springsteen.
You too, sir. See you.